Okay, so should we start? Let's start. Okay, so Chris actually asked me to say a few words about the Hubble constant value that we're getting out of Planck. People have been talking a lot about it being low. Is it weird? Is it discrepant? So I'm just going to summarize a few of the things that we think we've learned from it and what we think we're getting from it. Achiru has also been doing a lot of work trying to understand the phenomenology of how WMAP and Planck differ, so he's going to go after me and say a bit more. Okay? So I'll come back to this, actually. Okay, so I think the questions certainly that I've had, people here may have more questions, are, you know, how discrepant now is the Planck-derived Hubble constant with direct measurements? Is the new Planck measurement of the Hubble constant consistent with WMAP? Why is it lower than WMAP? And if, in fact, the local measurements are correct, and the errors are correct, and the Planck measurements are correct, what new physics, assuming that they are correct, what new physics could reconcile Planck and Hubble local measurements, in particular thinking forward to when local measurements could get even better and we might even be dealing with, you know, bigger tensions. Okay, so this is the summary plot from the Planck paper. So we have Planck down here at this value of just over 67 plus or minus just over 1. And WMAP is a bit higher, up at 70. But there, if you look at the difference in terms of error bars on WMAP, that error bar between WMAP and Planck is only one sigma difference. So Planck is one sigma lower in terms of the WMAP error than WMAP. But then we've got all these local measurements from... this is the one that we cite the most. This is the reset hour measurements taken from Cepheids and supernovae. And that's up higher at about 73, 74. And it is, in fact, you know, it is 2.5 sigma using the Cepheid, this using this error bar, higher than Planck. 2.5 sigma is kind of an uncomfortable number. Do we say it's significant? Do we, you know, if we trust the error bar, it is a little bit significant, but it's not 5 sigma yet. I'll just note from that, that people have been discussing a lot about worries about systematics. This measurement, one of the biggest worries is calibrating the first rung of the distance ladder. That measurement does it three different ways, using either the water maser system, NGC 4258, which you can measure, that's at about 7 megaparsecs from us. You can calibrate on that. By using a direct distance measure to that and then stepping out. Or you can use Cepheids in our Milky Way galaxy, or you can use Cepheids in the LMC. And I will just note that those give the mean value from these three different calibrators, give somewhere between 71 and 75. Those three get combined together to give the mean measurements. But that, I think, I mean, that scatter is moderately large that then gets combined together from three different measurements. The Carnegie Hubble project gets a very similar value, and it's they are calibrating their distance measurements using again Cepheids, but using Spitzer measurements to calibrate them locally.
So how independent are the Cepheids from the Carnegie?
They are. They should. That's actually quite not completely clear to me. There's some overlap between the data in them, but the calibration's done differently. I think that's right, and other people here might be able to chip in on that. So there's some common Cepheids, right?
Yeah, I think it depends which error curves you're interested in. So the big advantage of going to the mid-infrared was that a lot of these issues of metallicity, dependence of the period luminosity relation and dust extinction are much less significant. But you know, these are all still relative measurements. So the issue of the absolute calibration, you know, that someone has to measure a distance scale somewhere is still there. So some systematic curves are correlated, others are not.
Yes, there is definitely they're not completely independent results.
The supernova,
yeah.
The if you were to use each individually with their estimated statistical errors, how would they actually look on this?
Yeah, so I've got the numbers just here. I haven't put them on here. So I've only written down the errors that I think include systematics. So the errors are between 2.8 and 3.8. Okay, so this is the minimum. So this one is 71.3 plus or minus 4. This one is 75.7 plus or minus 2.6.
So the real issue I'm getting at is how they actually combine.
I know, yeah, sure.
Narrow.
Absolutely.
Error bar, which people use as an estimate.
Yeah, I know.
And then we have this use.
Yeah.
Shit, which seems kind of stupid.
Yeah.
Not that I...
No, I mean, the fact that the difference between that is bigger than the error bar that we use, is bigger than that error bar, and that seems a bit worrisome.
It's one of the things I liked about the HSD Key project. They actually made a serious attempt to differentiate systematic from statistical error.
Yeah.
And they have different distributions. And so, I think, it's not fair to say, but I think the basic challenge of I must get the smaller error bars than you do.
Yeah.
And to start games didn't make much sense to me, especially since we know that it's off relative to truth.
Yeah. This is a funny one. So this is a new, again, water meter system that's at about 50 megaparsecs from us. And so you can do a direct distance, you can do a direct measurement to it, and it's far enough away that you can use its recession velocity to just measure the Hubble constant directly. The old NGC 4258 is too close to do that, but this one is far enough away to do it. Curiously, they had a number that was about 71 plus or minus 7 or so. In the revision of their paper, which I think did come out before Planck, it went down to 69 plus or minus 7. So actually that should be down there. So that one was a little more consistent. And this...
What's the dominant error budget in the NGC 3789? Just said it's a fairly weak signal, so they can't...
Well, they've got some models. So what they're doing is they're modeling the secretion disk. They've got a space, I think they're actually doing MCMC, actually fitting a disk and a black hole mass.
So they've done away with the prior that they're living in lambda CDM, and they've replaced it with a prior about the shape of their accretion disk.
Kind of, yeah.
It's not unreasonable, but it's not an absolute measurement. There's still some,
yeah, definitely. You're still propagating uncertainties. Yeah, absolutely. And then this one is the Suyu et al. Time delay measurements. This is a strong lensing system where you just measure the time delays of variable objects in a strongly lensed system and work out the structure and size of this system and use it to get a direct distance measurement.
So why did the Planck team decide to use this system rather than B16 or just J had previously?
Yeah, you know what, I'm actually not completely sure because we should have used both of them. We didn't use them for anything actually, but in this plot, we should have put them both. I think that, I'm not sure if they derived a direct Hubble constant measure, did they?
Yeah, two of them were as well.
Yeah.
This one too.
Yeah. I don't know. I remember thinking actually, and Sherry actually asked if I could use both of them, so I'm not sure.
Somebody asked Sherry this question during one of her talks.
What did she say?
After Planck came out, and she didn't know why that door was this plot, but
yeah, okay.
She didn't make the plot.
No, that's true. But they should probably. Do you know what the number is? Actually, I don't have it off the top of my head.
It's a little lower.
It's a little lower.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's where we are. So let me just show you. So with the CMBE, I'll run this for a while, and we can look at it for a bit. This is one of Wayne Hu's plots. We're not really sensitive to H naught directly. We're sensitive mostly to omega CH squared, the matter density, and because we measure the peak positions of the CMB so well, once you measure the matter density, you can get to the Hubble constant. So this plot is basically zooming. Okay, so this color bar is zooming up and down in omega CH squared, omega MH squared, sorry, matter density. And there are three main effects. So as the matter density increases, look first at the first peak height compared to the Sachs-Wolf plateau, right? And as it increases, it's coming down with respect to the Sachs-Wolf plateau, right? That's the first effect. It's the ISW effect. Oh, come on. Okay, good. Okay, the second effect Now you want to look at this second third peak ratio. As you go up in omega mh squared, the third peak increases compared to the second peak. Right? See that? And that's again to do with the matter radiation equality epoch that changes with the matter density. And then the third effect, which you can't see quite as much, is as you increase the matter density, you get more damping in the silk damping regime. Those are kind of the three effects. And doubly MAP is only sensitive out to here, so it's only really sensitive to these two effects, the Sachs-Wolfe to first peak height and the second to third peak height. But Planck is going all the way out to there, so it can get more into the tail. Okay, then just to remind you, so this is the data that we then have from Planck. You've got data out to, you know, you've got the third peak from WMAP, then you've got the fourth, fifth, and sixth peak as well, into the seventh peak. If I just compare the parameters that come out, okay, so this is just a reminder. These are two different values for WMAP versus Planck. 70 plus or minus 2, 67 and a bit plus or minus 1. And
CMB alone?
Yeah, those are just from, yeah, CMB alone. Assuming lambda CDM. Assuming flatness. Yeah. I will make one comment that I've put at the bottom, which is that in the Planck analysis, we always use a slightly non-zero neutrino mass of 0.06 eV. And that is slightly correlated, anti-correlated with the Hubble constant. So doing the same thing for WMAP, the Hubble constant decreases a little bit, about by 0.5, down to a little bit below 70. So a little bit of that change is just due to the different analysis methods. But that's not enough to explain the full change. So, okay, so if we look at this, is then the distribution for the matter, the cold dark matter density, which I said is the main parameter that we're sensitive to with the CMB. The gray curve is the WMAP one. And the red one, forget the black one for now, is the Planck one. So you can see, again, yeah, it's shifted by about a sigma, but it's not inconsistent. It hasn't shifted outside the distribution altogether. But we do kind of want to know why it's gone up to this end, because that's also the same shift that then turns into the Hubble constant decreasing. If we look at the degeneracies, I've shown three main degeneracies here with different parameters. Up here is omega CH squared against the baryon density. Gray is WMAP and red is Planck. And you can see you squeeze in to be a bit more correlated between omega CH squared and the baryon density, moving up to higher cold dark matter density. At the same time, you squeeze down into the lower NS that we, you know and love, down to, you know, well below one. And that's unnecessary, right? So that there's these three parameters that are now much more correlated with Planck, which is you want higher omega CH squared, lower NS, lower baryon density, and that gives you then a higher Hubble constant. I'll show you one plot looking at how the difference shows up, but Achira is going to say a lot more about this. This plot is showing the Planck data using L to the 4 CL rather than our usual L squared. And here, the purple curve is the WMAP best fit curve rescaled by 0.975, where that accounts for this, you know, difference in amplitude between WMAP and Planck that none of us understand yet. But at least makes sure that things are going to match in the, you know, L less than 1,000 range. And the red curve is the Planck best fit model. And so you can see doing that rescaling, things agree really well here. But what you then get is that the WMAP model slightly overshoots in the fourth, fifth, and sixth peak compared to the Planck model and compared to the data. The data we're wanting to be a little bit lower in these fourth, fifth, and sixth peaks than the WMAP model or best fit model. So that's the fact that you've now got this data in this range says you actually are wanting this slightly different model to come out now.
there was a flood, this is almost indistinguishable.
We're talking about one sigma shift. So actually, one sigma shift.
No, but even for the next peak, I mean, the flood, the dash one is almost the solid one.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, so I think
as distant from the data, almost as.
Well, no, there is this. So this, yeah, that's right. But even here, you know, the goodness of fit of that red model compared to the purple one is going to be a bit better, and we are only talking about one sigma shift. Things shouldn't be visible by eye really until it's about five sigma. So they are subtle things. And I think you can see it better probably with difference plots, which Adju is going to show a couple of as well. So that one of the points to take away actually is exactly what you say. This is a subtle thing. They're not, when people say the Hubble constant has changed, it hasn't really changed significantly. It's gone down by a sigma. And we'd like to understand just where it comes from, because it's always nice to be able to explain phenomenologically what bit of the spectrum is favoring this number. I don't know what to make it. Okay, right now, it seems to work over the L range probe by doubly map, as in it seems that the overall factor.
Just for an outsider,
yeah.
What could account for that?
Well, so one of the things that we thought of that it could account for that, which actually seems not so likely if it's no raw calibration, could be, for example, that the WMAP beam could be different, or the beam errors could be bigger than we predicted. But actually, that would then produce a scale-dependent shape. And also, there's no, the direct beams are very well accounted for, so that's hard to explain too. If it looks like an overall calibration, we have to have something that can be a different calibration than two experiments. At the moment, I don't have a good explanation for what that is. I think it's something that we need to resolve between the two teams, and people are working on that. But I think that one of the big questions was, is it scale dependent or not? Looks pretty scale independent, at least over the range probe by both experiments. It doesn't seem to change the cosmological parameters derived from two experiments. Right? And that's something that I think is quite important to have in mind as well. You don't think so?
That's what I'm sure she was going to say as well. If it was really just literally an amplitude fix, then it should be capital degenerate with the amplitude of the primordial power spectrum.
Yeah.
So there shouldn't be any offset in any other parameter.
Well, okay, this is what I'll show you.
So there has to be some detail to the shift.
No, there doesn't. No, so this is what I think this plot shows a bit too. So this plot shows what parameters do you get out of Planck if you limit the L range of Planck. Okay, and if you limit the L range of Planck to L less than 1,000, this is in the likelihood paper, so I should have put the reference on here. This is the Planck likelihood paper. Then you increase, so H naught, for example, this is the Planck distribution, and this is how it increases if you just limit the range to L less than 1,000. And again, it goes up, and its peak is quite consistent with the WMAP best fit value here. And the same thing you can see for omega CH squared broadens and goes down a bit when you just use that L less than 1,000 range. So I don't think we have evidence yet that the parameters from the range probed by the same two experiments are different.
Can you remind me which color is which?
Oh, yes, they're not on here. Blue is L less than 1,000. Purple, L less than 1,500. And then L less than 2,000, L less than 2,500. So the real shift, or the real shrinkage, is between L of 1,000 and L of 1,500 that you get from Planck that you didn't have with WMAP.
WMAP is the vertical
line, is it? Yeah, the WMAP best fit values are the vertical lines. They're just kind of put on a bit, a bit by eye, actually.
But nevertheless, if you're about to argue that it's the higher L, the Planck data that pulls the contours in some direction,
yeah.
Because there's an absence of data there in WMAP,
yeah.
The WMAP contours should be wider and encompass the possible behaviors that
they do, they do.
It's a sigma, so change by sigma.
They do.
Yeah.
I think that's, they're not moving outside it.
Saying it another way,
yeah.
If I take WMAP and I get exactly the same 1,000
yeah.
Do I essentially get that blue line?
So I wanted to actually make this plot, and I haven't made it. I think the WMAP curves, I think actually are a little bit...
I wonder if this is because you're using only 30% of the sky, whereas we're using 70%.
Yeah, that's right. I think that might be it, actually. Yeah, because I think that blue curve is a bit broader than WMAP's curve. It looks a bit broader, right? It looks a bit more than twice that curve. But I think it's similar. I want to make that plot, actually. I haven't made the plot.
Can you go back to the previous plot? Maybe you can see by eye it's less than
1. You can't. Not in that. You need a different spot. You need a different spot.
So the blue curve is Planck? The light, the kind of baby blue curve is Planck?
Planck Ellison 1000. Yeah. And it's another way of seeing this, too, is this is, again, from the Planck likelihood paper. So I'm not trying to be that thinner. If you just use the LFI data, let's focus here on H naught. The red is the full Planck curve, and the black is if you just use LFI 70 gigahertz data, which again is truncated at just above 1,000. And again, that's kind of moving in the same direction, both for all of the parameters. So it looks pretty consistent with what we're seeing here.
The Planck best on really appreciates these.
Yeah.
That big feature that...
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's the L of 1800 feature that shows up then in the... Yeah. This is obviously quite hand-wavy, but from this I take that over the angular range probe by both experiments, things are consistent. And by increasing the L range probe by Planck, you're then squeezing into the corner of the degeneracy that wants a bit more damping. That's got the lower Hubble constant. Taking a different tack, let's say now that when I say difference is real, I don't mean Planck WMAP. I mean, let's say we really want to use the HST measurements and say that the errors are completely correct, and we want to say we want the Planck measurements to use them too. Which parameters can you vary that could bring them into agreement? And the two obvious ones are the number of...
You don't disagree with them.
I'm sorry, okay, 2.5 sigma.
Inside the confidence interval. It's a ubiquitous confidence interval. If you're inside, you're fine. There's no sense where if you're at the edge of the confidence interval, then it's somehow more discrepant than being in the middle.
Right? Okay, so I guess, well, this is the discussion I think that people are having a lot, right?
Oh, it means the
HST,
because the
heat
logic.
Oh, I meant the Hubble constant. I meant the HST measurements from Adam Riess, the Riess et al. Measurements. They're also HST.
The heat project is fine.
Yeah, no, but I mean the Riess et al. Measurements. So the two parameters that you, the obvious ones are N effective and W. So here what I've done is just very roughly this last night, scatter plot of the number of neutrino species against H naught, where purple is Planck alone, and blue is with the BAO included. So you do really, you need to be consistent with Planck, but you'd like to make sure that any model you went into didn't then massively disagree with the BAO data. And you have this correlation between the two. And so this is the 95% confidence limit from the Riess et al. Hubble constant measurement. So if you really want to stick within that, you want to be going up into the kind of N of 3 to 3.5 region for N effective, if that's where you want to go. And if you look at this, and then the other thing is that you can argue then is to say, well, how cool would it be if we could shrink that error bar in half and see if it, you know, stays at the same mean or shrink or shift, because if it stays at the same mean, then that would actually exclude N equals 3. So that's, you know, that would be the motivation for getting that error bar narrower. The other one is W, again. Purple is Planck, and this is with BAO in blue. W equals minus 1 just skims that 2 sigma region. If you want to then be within 95%, you need to be going down to W of minus 1.2, 1.3, which, you know, isn't that appealing, but might be the universe we live in. Who knows? You can't increase mu. Mu anticorrelates with H naught, so that would get H naught lower. So there aren't other kind of obvious parameters that shift it, although perhaps there are more interesting parameters. Yeah.
So as long as degeneracy omega matter is changing, or
yeah, that's right.
So if I'm very far down in this degeneracy, am I still consistent with other things? I mean, like,
I think that the main thing you want to be consistent with is if you take that, the blue contour, or there's just scatter plots here, then that's consistent with BAO. So basically, you're basically consistent with other data.
You're probably running into problems cross elements because.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's true. Actually, that's true. That's true. That's a good point. Yeah, you probably are. I haven't seen that. Yeah.
BAO isn't sensitive.
No, that's right. Actually, that's right. Good point. Yeah, so you'd have to be careful about that. Okay. Just, I just make a quick comment that the lensing data.
Can we just go back?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure.
Well, you know this issue that my good friend, the friends in Supernova Legacy,
yeah,
seem to pull out the rug under their results of the
flight. Yeah, right. Yeah.
And they said they have a recalibration, but I contacted Ray Carl.
Yeah.
And it's still controversial, that is to say. Presented as a bit of a fait accompli, but it's not yet.
Yeah.
And the tragedy of this is we can't use the supernova results until they finally come out, unless you want to use the union results, which I don't think are good to use. But this was an attempt to be recalibrated. But just as an aside, with the current supernova legacy survey, it definitely wants the
BLS-1
in combination with the Planck data.
Yeah.
So for those of us who like physics, that's very disturbing.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah, it's the same way, same direction.
It's going in the same direction.
Yeah.
So maybe, just curious.
No, you're right. That's true.
Is that a prior volume effect in some sense that it's tailing off so far in the
down here?
Yeah.
Here it's been cut off at 100. So it's basically it would keep going further.
Yeah.
It's just the geometric degeneracy would
right,
like.
Right. So it's not really telling you it. I mean, it's not telling you that the data wants to be.
It's no, it's not saying it'd rather be really that it, well, in a strict Bayesian way a little bit, but the likelihood is the same.
Back to Dickman, what direction is the supernova look like in that plot?
It prefers more negative W.
Where does its degeneracy line go?
Actually, on this on the H naught plane, I'm not totally sure.
Their contours are independent measurements, right? They don't measure it.
That's right, actually. Yes. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true. That's true.
Right, we haven't actually run at least with the H-naught data included. So that usually, you know, Planck recommends BAOs, but not H-naught. And if you do H-naught and supernova, I mean, that's two nodos. No way, but that's not fair. The recommendation came after you look at the data. And you include the BAO just because they have been with you.
No. I
we have
a
certain
doctrinaire
here
collaboration.
And it's slightly different view. I mean, the argument in favor of that, because it used to be that it was BAO that had a slight discrepancy. The argument in favor is that the neat thing about the agreement within the Lambda CDM context is that the BAO and the BAO CMB are measuring the same basic thing. So that's pretty good. So that's the argument that says it's more pristine.
But at a certain point, you do also have to look at. You can't be completely blind and say, I'm just going to combine these, whatever happens, in case, well, you can and you can't, right? You can decide to combine them if they're completely discrepant and then require yourself to look for the new physics that brings them into line. Or you can say, oh, look, they might be inconsistent. Should I now look for a systematic? And I don't think you can't be completely statistically rigorous and have systematics in your life, I think.
Any theorists can.
At least hyperparameters in principle to judge things, but not just two data sets. But if you have more than two, you can let data sets vote against another data set.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. that would be the, that would actually be constricting.
Which is more statistical, but nevertheless, you have to put in even more prior information to do that. So it may not be a good thing. I just thought, although supernova measurements are independent of H, they're not independent of omega M, and omega M is varying down to degeneracy. I think whether that means that
in practice,
the supernova is actually angled in that plane. Can't quite get my head into the third dimension to work that out.
It probably is.
If you have prior on I square, yeah, that's true.
That probably is.
I think so.
Yeah. Okay.
Isn't the coupling between dark energy and dark matter mimicking sometimes the negative W?
It hasn't been analyzed, easier to swallow from a physics point of view than
a negative kinetic term.
Yeah. It hasn't been analyzed within.
It's relatively harmless.
There's definitely models like that.
Is someone investigating that right now? Not within Planck yet, but maybe in this room. I'm just going to make a super quick comment that we've got this great new data from the lensing of the CMB. And this is just a plot of the lensing measurements, the lensing potential power spectrum measure from the CMB. At the moment, including that doesn't change the H0 value that much. It keeps it at, you know, just a bit above 67. But I just want to make the comment that there's a really neat constraint now on the Hubble constant in a curved universe just from the lensing. You get it down to an error bar of about 3, even in a curved universe. And that's massively better than we could ever do before with just this primordial CMB. So I think that's kind of neat, but it's obviously a different question than what we were just looking at.
When you say a curved universe, does that mean that you also know what omega k is?
No, you homogenize over omega k.
But there's a distribution for omega k.
That's right. Yeah. But that includes the distribution for it.
Oh right. So how big is omega k when you allow it to?
It's quite restricted. I don't have the number in my head.
Like on the order of 1%. I mean, it's.
It's about twice as big as the VAO limit, which is, I guess, it's a couple percent, isn't it? I think.
Right.
So it's probably about 4-5%.
Okay. Oh, so it's actually fairly. I mean, it's.
It's getting good. It's getting good. But it's not better than VAO.
With VAO, I thought you were down to about a percent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. So then it's probably then.
So
I was actually surprised at the curvature, which, like 1% curvature, would change it that much, in fact.
Would change.
I mean, it seems almost like the H0 changes more than I would guess if you put in a tiny amount of curvature.
Oh, I see. Well, no, but the Hubble constant changes.
Well, curvature is 1%. Well, I suppose it's a 1%. It's on the order
of 1%.
Yeah, it's on the order of 1% change.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Let's take it back. Okay, I'm not surprised at all.
Okay, fine. I'm going to hand it over to Arturo. So I think I said this. So my current conclusions are we're different at 2.5 sigma. That's not new. We're more consistent with this new water meter measurement. Best fit differs by 1 sigma with WMAP, but using the same L range, things are much more consistent. And things in the higher order peak seem to be driving the difference. And the two models that could take us into kind of more agreement are higher and effective or weird negative W. Cheer it up.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, absolutely.
Doesn't this suggest, if the interpretation is correct, that restricting the L range makes the data consistent, doesn't it suggest that you need one more parameter in your model to get a fit which would be consistent for both sets of both L ranges that you...
I think this question of consistency is we're talking about a sigma shift. I think the result from the full Planck range is consistent with the WMAP range.
Okay.
Right, it's just that the central value moves by a sigma.
Right.
And that's actually fine.
A WMAP sigma.
A WMAP sigma, yeah.
Except if you decided to just sample a certain L range, then you would not achieve the same best fit.
No, but
you wouldn't have the same error either.
You have a bigger error. They would be consistent. I think that's the thing. You know, if I actually saw the fact that the L less than 100,000 gave me a result that was then 2.5 sigma difference, then I would say I need a new parameter. And that's what we see when we add new parameters. They're all kind of favored at like the 1 sigma level. And that's saying the same thing actually, that they're not favored at more than that level.
And another point is that what I was worried about is whether the change in parameter came from the range of W measurements. That would indicate the data inconsistent. But if the improvement comes from the region that W didn't measure, that's what you can expect.